You know that feeling when you're walking down the aisle of an electronics store, right? And you see those massive kind of spaceship-looking
Oh,
routers.
yeah, the ones with like eight antennas sticking out of them.
Exactly. And the boxes are always covered in these explosive fonts, just screaming about speed. You
Yeah.
know, gigabits upon gigabits of bandwidth. So you buy the most expensive one, you take it home, set it up, and you're paying for like the absolute highest tier of internet from your
So it's
provider.
doing everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And then you join a crucial video call for work, and suddenly someone's voice turns into this weird robotic stutter, or you're playing a competitive game about to win, and your character just rubber bands across the screen.
It is the absolute worst feeling.
It is, and you're just left staring at this plastic spaceship on your desk with all its blinking lights, wondering why a device that is supposedly this fast still gives you such a flaky connection.
Yeah, it honestly feels like a betrayal of the basic promise of technology. You know, we've all been conditioned to believe that if we just buy a bigger pipe, the water will flow perfectly. But the entire networking industry is basically waking up to this reality that the size of the pipe was never actually the problem.
Which brings us directly to our mission for today's deep dive. Welcome, by the way. We are so glad you're joining us today. We are looking at a truly fascinating autopsy report. It's titled The Zero Latency Era: Complete 802.11bn Autopsy and the Death of Raw Speed Hardware.
It's a great paper. Really dense, but great.
Super dense, yeah. But we're going to unpack this massive paradigm shift that's happening right now in the tech world. We're exploring exactly why the decades-long speed war in Wi-Fi is officially dead and, well, what's rising up from its ashes.
And I mean, this is a profound pivot for both consumer and enterprise tech. We are talking about the upcoming Wi-Fi 8 standard, which is officially designated as IEEE 802.11bn.
Right, but here is the detail in this report that just completely contradicts how we usually buy tech. For 20 years, I mean, from 802.11G all the way up to Wi-Fi 7, router manufacturers sold us on a single flashy number, which was theoretical maximum speed.
Yeah, that was the whole marketing playbook.
Exactly. But Wi-Fi 8, which is being branded as ultra-high reliability, or UHR, by the way, it's doing the unthinkable, it's capping its maximum theoretical speed at 46 gigabits per second,
Yep.
which is the exact same cap as Wi-Fi 7. There is literally zero increase in top speed.
Which in the consumer electronics world, intentionally halting your top line number is basically heresy.
Right.
I mean, if a new smartphone came out and touted the exact same processor speed as the previous generation, people would riot.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. If the new generation of Wi-Fi isn't actually any faster, what exactly are we upgrading to? And why in the world is the entire industry calling a flatline in speed a technological revolution?
Well, to understand what Wi-Fi 8 is actually trying to accomplish, we first have to look at why that old philosophy of faster is always better finally just, broke down under its own weight. The truth that the industry doesn't really advertise is that we haven't genuinely needed more raw speed for years.
Wait, really?
Yeah, think about your daily internet usage. A pristine 4K stream on Netflix, that only takes about 25 megabits per second.
Oh, wow. I always assumed it was way higher than that.
No, it's surprisingly low. And even if you're downloading a massive bloated video game, you rarely saturate a full gigabit connection. You usually get throttled on the server side anyway, or your local hard drive just simply cannot write the incoming data fast enough to even use all that bandwidth.
So we've essentially been hoarding bandwidth that our devices can't even process.
Exactly. The real enemy of your network is contention, interference, and jitter. But for years, the way companies fought this whole spec sheet war was by just making the wireless channels wider.
Right, giving us bigger pipes.
Exactly. With Wi-Fi 7, they pushed channels up to 320 megahertz wide, and they use these incredibly complex modulation schemes. You might actually see the term 4K QAM on the box when you're at the store.
Yeah, I see those acronyms all the time. But let's ground that for a second. What does 4K QAM actually mean for the literal signal traveling through my house?
Okay, so modulation is essentially the method of packing data into a radio wave. Imagine a delivery truck, right? In the early days of Wi-Fi, you put one sturdy box in the truck and drove it to its destination. 4K QAM is like meticulously stacking 4,000 delicate glass boxes into that exact same truck.
Oh man, that sounds precarious.
It is. It holds a massive amount of data, but the denser you pack it, I mean, the more fragile it becomes. Under sterile laboratory conditions, those massive speed numbers on the box are technically true, but your home is not a sterile laboratory.
No, it's full of walls and plumbing and other signals bouncing everywhere.
Right. And that wide 320 megahertz channel carrying those 4,000 fragile boxes, is extremely vulnerable. The second your neighbor's router transmits on an overlapping frequency, or, you know, someone in your kitchen turns on a microwave oven, that pristine wide channel shatters. The delivery truck basically hits a pothole and all the glass boxes break.
There's actually this brilliant quote in our source material from Dr. Elena Rostova. She's the lead wireless architect at Cisco Enterprise that perfectly visualizes this exact thing. She says that for years, router companies have been selling consumers a Ferrari, but forcing them to drive it in rush hour traffic.
That is such a good analogy. A Ferrari is completely useless if you're stuck bumper to bumper. When that fragile channel shatters, your router panics. It's forced to step down its modulation, so maybe it goes back to packing just a few sturdy boxes.
It's trying to adapt to the bad road.
Exactly. It drops packets of data. It has to pause, wait for the air to clear, and then retransmit that data. This whole chaotic process is known as contention and backoff. And it's the silent killer of wireless performance because it generates jitter.
And jitter is the absolute enemy of anything happening in real time. I mean, think about the last time you experienced a momentary freeze on a high-stakes Zoom call. The pipe wasn't too small. It's that the traffic inside the pipe was totally chaotic. The cars just kept crashing into each other, stopping the flow.
What's fascinating here is the core philosophical shift the engineers at the IE made to solve this. They realized that pushing more data over the 2.4, 5, and 6 gigahertz spectrums was basically a dead end. I mean, due to regulatory power limits and just the basic laws of physics. So they pivoted. They moved from probabilistic networking to deterministic networking.
The autopsy report leans really heavily on those two terms. And I gotta say, probabilistic networking makes it sound like my router is just like crossing its fingers.
Honestly, that is a very accurate way to describe it.
Really?
Yeah. Huh? Probabilistic networking means your router sends data on a best effort basis. It throws the packets into the air, shouts as loud as it can, and just hopes they arrive on time. If the environment is noisy, those packets might get delayed or dropped entirely.
Which gives us that awful lag.
Right. Deterministic networking, on the other hand, means a critical packet of data is mathematically guaranteed to arrive within a strictly defined millisecond window, no matter how congested the airspace is. It shifts the entire logic of the hardware from compete and transmit to coordinate and schedule.
Okay, but if we can't just shout louder and drive faster to get the data to our devices, how exactly does Wi-Fi 8 build that smarter highway? This leads us right into the physical mechanisms, starting with what the autopsy calls the absolute crown jewel of the new standard, which is multi-AP coordination, or MAPC.
MAPC is huge, but to grasp the magnitude of it, we kind of need to look at how current multi-node mesh networks operate. Let's say you have a high-end three-node mesh system in your house right now. You might assume they work as a team, but at the physical transmission layer, those three access points are fundamentally selfish entities.
Wait, I'm struggling with that a bit. Because they're sold as a unified system in one box, right? They share the same network name, the same password. Why wouldn't they cooperate?
Well, they share a logical layer, sure. The credentials and the network name. But the actual radios inside them do not orchestrate their transmissions. They're essentially three roommates sharing an apartment, but they're all shouting their conversations at the exact same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when they transmit simultaneously on overlapping channels, they create self-interference. They actually raise the noise floor and reduce the overall capacity of your own network.
Wait, so my current super expensive three-node mesh system is basically just three arguing neighbors yelling at my phone?
Sadly, yes. That is the reality of the physical layer right now. But MAPC fundamentally alters that dynamic by introducing a microsecond level orchestration layer. Whether it's through a central controller or some distributed logic, MAPC syncs up all the routers so they act as a single intelligent organism.
So if we go back to our traffic analogy, MAPC is installing a synchronized traffic light system for your data. Instead of all the cars honking at the intersection and just hoping for the best, every single movement is meticulously scheduled.
Yes. A hyper-intelligent traffic light system that can perform tricks that were literally physically impossible before. One of those tricks is coordinated spatial reuse, or COSR.
Okay, what does COSR do?
It allows the routers to actively talk to each other and agree to dial down their transmit power at specific microsecond intervals so they don't step on each other's toes.
Okay, I have to challenge the premise there. If the routers actively dial down their transmit power, doesn't that inherently shrink my Wi-Fi coverage? Like, how is a weaker signal a good thing when I'm, say, trying to get Wi-Fi out in my backyard?
I know it sounds super counterintuitive, but think of the signal not as a static bubble, but as this flexible breathing shape. The routers aren't permanently turning down their power. They're dynamically shaping their transmission footprints millisecond by millisecond.
Okay, tracking with you.
So if the router in your living room needs to send a massive packet to your television, the router in the kitchen momentarily dips its power so its signal doesn't bleed through the wall and cause interference. It's like a localized whisper so someone else can speak clearly. And they do this coordination thousands of times per second.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. It's active cooperation to keep the airwaves clear. Now, the report also mentions something called DRU under this MAPC umbrella.
Right, distributed resource units. This is where the coordination gets incredibly granular. Under the old standards, if a burst of interference hit a channel, the router would often just have to abandon that entire channel.
It would just drop it completely.
Yeah. But DRU allows the routers to break the data channel down into smaller, non-contiguous chunks.
Explain non-contiguous for us. How does breaking it apart help the signal?
Imagine you're driving on a four-lane highway, and there's a massive pothole in lane two. In the past, the router would look at that pothole and say, well, the highway is damaged, close the whole thing down. With DRU, the router can carve the data up and say, hey, send traffic down lanes 1, 3, and 4. Just drive around the pothole. If a Bluetooth headset or a microwave creates noise in one tiny slice of the spectrum, the Wi-Fi 8 router simply routes the data around that specific interference in real time.
That's incredibly smart. Okay, I see how coordinating the routers solves the problem of them yelling at each other. But my phone isn't a router. If I'm walking through my house on a video call, my phone is a moving target. How does the router guarantee that sub-millisecond delivery to a device that is constantly shifting its position and its environment?
That is the other half of the zero latency equation, and it relies on a technology called EMLO, or Enhanced Multi-Link Operation.
We should definitely clarify how this differs from the previous generation, because Wi-Fi 7 introduced standard MLO, right, where a device could connect to the 5 gigahertz and 6 gigahertz bands at the exact same time.
It did, yeah. But early implementations of Wi-Fi 7 MLO were often pretty clunky because they were entirely reactive. The media access control layer, which is the part of the system that decides who gets to talk and when, was somewhat divorced from the physical radio layer.
So they weren't really talking to each other.
Right. The router would send data down whichever lane was fastest. But if a connection failed due to a sudden spike in interference, the system had to react, pause, and switch bands. And even though that switch was incredibly fast, it still induced a micro stutter.
And a micro stutter is exactly what we are trying to eradicate. I mean, if you're wearing a wireless VR headset, a micro stutter is the difference between a perfectly smooth experience and, frankly, instant motion sickness.
Absolutely. So Wi-Fi 8 upgrades this to EMLO by tightly integrating the physical hardware with the media access control layer. The defining characteristic of EMLO is that it's predictive. It constantly monitors something called the signal-to-interference plus noise ratio, or CNR, across all available links simultaneously.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Break down how measuring that noise ratio actually allows the router to predict a failure before it even happens.
So CNR is essentially a mathematical measurement of how loud your clean signal is compared to the background static. Think of it like watching the water level rise in a river. If EMLO sees the noise floor rising rapidly on the 6 gigahertz band, say, a radar system just kicked on nearby, or your neighbor just started a massive file transfer, it knows mathematically that the channel is about to flood.
It sees the storm coming.
Exactly. It does not wait for a data packet to drown. It doesn't wait for a failure. It seamlessly, instantly shifts the critical payload over to the 5 gigahertz band before the interference can cause any delay at all.
Preemptive routing. I mean, that is how the IE is targeting a massive 25% reduction in worst case, 95th percentile latency. For you listening, this means your game won't suddenly rubber band just because your roommate decided to start a 100 gigabyte download in the other room. The router just sees the congestion forming and simply routes your gaming data around it.
And if we zoom out and look at the enterprise level, the implications of this predictive routing are staggering. Consider Industry 4.0. You know, the push toward fully automated factories and logistics centers. You have automated guided vehicles, or AGVs, moving massive pallets of goods around a warehouse.
Those big robot forklifts, basically.
Safety protocols require these robots to maintain a continuous heartbeat connection to the central server. If an AGV moves behind a metal pillar and loses connection for even 50 milliseconds, it assumes it is flying blind. Safety standards force it to just slam on the brakes to avoid hitting a human worker.
Right. A momentary drop in Wi-Fi can cost a factory thousands of dollars in lost productivity. But with the zero latency environment created by MAPC and EML working together, those robots can function safely and continuously without physical Ethernet cables dragging behind them. We are talking about wireless connections that genuinely rival the mathematical stability of a hardwired connection. Okay, I have to step in here because my skeptic alarm is officially ringing.
Uh-oh.
The cars are communicating perfectly. The traffic lights are perfectly synced. The factory robots are happy. I mean, this sounds like an absolute wireless utopia, which logically brings up the catch, because the autopsy report warns that the upgrade path is going to be incredibly painful. What is this orchestration actually going to cost us?
Well, the catch is rooted in computational physics,
yeah,
and the sheer cost of the silicon required to pull this orchestration off. Calculating that signal-to-interference plus noise ratio across multiple bands in real time, preemptively, while coordinating with three other routers, that requires immense processing power.
You can't just use the basic low-power router chips we've been using for the last decade, right?
I'm not even close. Yeah. These Wi-Fi 8 routers are going to require incredibly powerful neural processing units, NPUs, built directly into the hardware just to handle the matrix math. And because of that heavy lifting, the first wave of Wi-Fi 8 access points are going to run extremely hot.
They'll need fans and stuff.
They will likely require active cooling fans, yeah. They're going to draw massive amounts of power, and they're going to carry a substantial price premium.
And the cost doesn't stop at just buying one expensive router. Because to actually get the benefits of multi-AP coordination, you can't just drop one Wi-Fi 8 router into your current setup. You need a whole fleet of them.
Right.
And to get the benefits of predictive EMLO, you need a fully upgraded ecosystem. Your router has to be Wi-Fi 8, and the modem inside your phone, your laptop, or your VR headset also has to be Wi-Fi 8 certified.
Yeah, you are buying an entirely new fleet of vehicles just to use the new highway. The financial barrier to entry for a fully realized Wi-Fi 8 network is going to be incredibly steep initially.
I actually find the marketing struggle around this kind of hilarious. Just think about the consumer psychology here. For 20 years, these marketing departments have had the easiest job in the world. They just say, hey, buy this box. It has a bigger number on it. 10 gigabits. 20 gigabits.
It's a very, very simple pitch.
Super simple. But now they have to pitch, hey, buy this incredibly expensive router that draws more power and runs hot, and it has the exact same top speed as your old one, but it dynamically reshapes your transmission footprint to reduce 95th percentile latency.
This raises an important question, though. How do you sell that? It is an impossibly dense message for the average consumer walking into an electronics store. If a buyer doesn't see a larger top-line speed, their immediate assumption is that there's no tangible upgrade.
Which is exactly why the Wi-Fi Alliance, branding it as ultra-high reliability or UHR, is basically a do-or-die strategy for them. They have to, like, pivot us from asking how fast is my download to asking how smooth is my experience. And the source text points out an incredible irony for the gaming hardware market specifically. Because for years, gamers have been sold these routers that look like aggressive, spiky red Decepticons.
Oh, the classic gaming router aesthetic. They look fast, but they often rely on very rudimentary quality of service software that just clumsily prioritizes gaming traffic over everything else, which, you know, doesn't actually solve the physical layer interference.
But Wi-Fi 8 bakes enterprise-grade deterministic latency directly into the hardware standard itself. So that whole aggressive aesthetic might completely die out, because a boring, flat, gray enterprise access point from Cisco is going to mathematically guarantee a lower ping than the flashy Decepticon router. The whole gaming hardware market is going to have to figure out a completely new identity.
It really highlights the challenge of selling an invisible benefit. A perfect Wi-Fi 8 connection is defined entirely by what you don't notice. You don't notice lag. You don't notice buffering. You don't notice drops. Training a public that has been totally addicted to feed tests to value the absence of a problem is going to require a massive educational campaign.
So with all these hurdles, you know, the hardware costs, the heat, the marketing nightmare, what is the actual timeline for all of this? When are we reasonably going to see this in our homes?
Well, the rollout is going to be highly strategic. The IE standard itself isn't actually expected to be fully finalized until early 2028.
Okay, so we are still a few years out from this being a reality.
Yes. And when the hardware does arrive, the initial wave is going to heavily target the enterprise sector, specifically that Industry 4.0 market we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
Those automated factories and smart logistics centers have been desperate for a wireless standard capable of replacing physical Ethernet cables.
Because they have the budget for it.
Exactly. They have the massive budgets required to absorb the premium cost of these NPU-heavy access points, because the efficiency gains in a factory are worth millions.
So the enterprise sector essentially subsidizes the research and development for the rest of us.
That is usually how it works, yeah. It will likely take 2 to 3 years after that initial enterprise rollout, before the hardware costs and power consumption come down enough for widespread, affordable consumer adoption. So for the average home, realistically, you're looking at late 2028 or even 2029 before you upgrade.
So what does this all mean? If we step back and look at this entire autopsy of the speed war, it means we are finally witnessing the true maturation of wireless technology. Wi-Fi is graduating. It's moving from being a convenient but flaky alternative to plugging in to becoming a mathematically trusted, mission-critical tool.
The overarching theme here is that in a wireless world, predictability is far more valuable than potential.
Predictability over potential. I love that framing. And for you listening, I want to leave you with a final, slightly provocative thought to mull over. If Wi-Fi 8 truly achieves the deterministic reliability and the zero latency of a physical Ethernet cable, what happens to the physical design of our future homes and office buildings? We have spent the last 100 years designing architecture around exactly where we can run copper wires.
That's very true.
Right. Architects plan wiring closets. We rip out drywall to install Cat 6 cables. But if the concept of a dead zone or a dropped packet is completely eradicated by these coordinating routers, we might be looking at the total end of wall ports. We might never need to hardwire a television, a gaming console, or a desktop computer ever again. It could fundamentally change interior architecture as we know it.
The wireless standard finally dictating the design of physical space. It's a really fascinating implication.
It really is. So the next time you look at that spaceship router with the massive numbers on the box, remember, we don't need a faster Ferrari. We just need a much smarter highway.